This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Coming up on the program today at 4 o'clock, we'll talk NFL with our buddy John Clayton, as we do every day. David Schoenfeld from ESPN.com covers the sport of baseball, will be joining us because the sport of baseball is making news for all of the wrong reasons once again, and it's all centered around the Houston Astros and this controversy. It's just like we talked about, I think this is going to be death by a thousand pinpricks, as I said. I think it's just going to, each day there'll be a little bit, somebody will say something, a former player will say something, as they get more access to players during spring training, it's just going to continue to come up.
And I saw a guy on CBS, and he was talking about, hey, this time of year in the spring, you're supposed to look like revitalized and ready to go, and the Astros, the players, the owner, everybody, they look worn out.
You know, when you have this much time to prepare for something, I marvel when you can come out and look as ill-prepared as the Astros did.
Yeah.
Well, how long has this been going on?
I'm with you, especially the owner there. He just
The owner's the one that set up this whole thing. We heard him talking about, hey, these guys are going to come out. They're going to apologize. This is what, you know, get ready. This is what's going to happen when they report to spring training. There's going to be an apology and all of that stuff going on. And he's the one who had the worst showing out of everybody in this entire thing.
Yeah.
Like, you had some players up there speaking, and I saw some of them speaking at their lockers in the clubhouse. But the owner of all people swung and missed the hardest, no pun intended here, but Jim Crane is a buffoon. I don't know what else to say about him. When you listen to what he said, I'm thinking, how are you possibly this tone deaf? How are you this dumb? And you've put yourself in a position to own a major league franchise. It's a miracle. I mean, I'll play a little bit of what he said, but this here he is just talking about overall what he thinks this has done to the game and all of that.
Listen, the Yankees have had a few comments out there. You know, our opinion is, you know, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
It didn't impact the game. You did it for a season and a half. What the hell are you talking about, man? It didn't impact the game, so you just continued to do it because it's not doing anything, but, man, I'm having a great time banging this trash can and going into the video room and directing everybody as to what they're supposed to do in this job that's producing no results whatsoever.
Have you got the follow-up question there from the reporter from ESPN?
Yes, this is, it just makes him look more it's absurd. Here he is being asked about that statement a minute later.
Jim, when talking about the Yankees there, did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. Basically, you know, as the commissioner said in his report, he's not going to go backwards. It's hard to determine how it impacted the game, if it impacted the game, and that's where we're going to leave it.
Some reporters are so much more professional than I would have been in that setting, because I would have heard that and I was like, hey, Jim, you said it didn't impact the game? How can you say something like that?
Literally 60 seconds ago you said
which
this.
I really appreciated how that reporter handled it. Just straight to him, and then he still just kind of dodged everything.
And you assume he's a smart guy. You got to be smart on some level to get to where he is at in life. How is he that tone deaf? How does he not understand the perception? Even if he's not sorry, you've got to come out, the plan's got to be, and you've got to have the people around you going into this, all right, here's the game plan. Here's what we're going to say.
Going to say we're sorry.
Yeah, even if he thinks it's BS and none of it helped or whatever, if he believes that, help yourself. But he's got to come out, hey, I don't have an excuse for what happened here. I'm the owner, and ultimately this falls on my shoulders, and it's going to be my job moving forward to make sure nothing like this is ever associated with this franchise again. I couldn't be more remorseful for what's happened, and I really don't have much to say past that, other than you can count on the fact this will not be part of the Astros story moving forward. Done. Then he could go behind closed doors and go, we didn't do anything wrong. Didn't affect. I mean, if that's your opinion, help yourself. But to stand there in front of the mics after having all of this time to prepare for it and come out with that, you just made it worse. You just made it worse.
I'm trying to remember what it is. It's when I was at Merrill Lynch, it was something kind of like the category of apologetics, where you are, you're finding what would people say that is, you know, like when we're selling our product at Merrill Lynch, what are going to be some of the, I don't know, some of the resistant questions?
You're, well, you're trying to react to whatever the...
Yeah, whatever the client's going to say, like, well, what about the money? Well, how come it's more expensive? Well, how come it's this and that? I mean, this is a guy who's a businessman. I was just reading up on, you know, how he earned. I mean, don't you assume that every owner in the NFL, Major League Baseball, is really smart? You have to be
brilliant
really
in
smart.
Their field.
Right. You
sure.
have to be brilliant in order to get to, you know, to make that much money. And now people might say, well, you know, there's, you know, favoritism and things like that. And yeah, certainly there is some of that, but there has to have been something about him somewhere along the way where, like, he, you know, he's smart enough to figure out what are people, what are going to be their objections, I think is what we used to call it. What are their objections? And he hadn't thought through that at all. So that's the part that surprised me. One of the guys on CBS Sports today, I saw another report and he was saying, you know, these guys should have been out there maybe in suits and, you know, maybe, you know, the guy goes, or an ascot or something, or just anything, but they all were kind of in t-shirts and looked like it.
What are their objections?
Know. And yeah, they're, whoa, that was weird. We got
that was
stream.
You.
Yeah,
that was the stream on
right.
delay.
But yeah, it's just very strange to me that he wasn't prepared for that. Nobody seems prepared for it. And you know, what would you say?
What I just said. Hey, I acknowledge everything that took place. Ultimately, this falls on me. I'm the owner. I'm the person that put all of these people in the positions that they occupied. So this falls on me, and I couldn't be more remorseful, and I'm just going to make this promise to you right now. It will not be part of the story of this franchise moving forward.
How about if you just came out?
They should hire you.
Yeah. Well, how about if you just came out and said, you know what, we feel really bad, and just to show you how bad we feel, we're going to vacate the 2017 World Series championship.
I don't think they have
that
option.
And I want to apologize to the Dodgers. I know Rob Manfred has said we can't do that. That's not an option, according to Bob Stelton. But we're still going to do it anyway because we feel like there's always going to be an asterisk there. It's always going to be tainted. And the only thing we can think of to make it up to the American public that watches baseball is that we're going to just completely vacate that championship and we're going to get back our World Series shares of $438,000 per player.
Yeah, maybe they could donate. That would be another avenue we could take. Hey, the total amount adds up to whatever it is. We're going to donate all of that money to
Little League Baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever charity. Help yourself, as long as it's not the Mr. Crane charity. You know, it's just I heard that and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. There's no way you're this dumb.
Have they had meetings with Manfred too?
And I wonder, would certainly assume they have.
I would think so. And I don't know what his culpability is in all of this, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, but you'd think that he would have gotten together with him and said, hey, man, this isn't just about you guys. This is about Major League Baseball in general. And somebody mentioned in the pit earlier before the show, what about Boston? We're not hearing anything about them. They're somehow falling to the wayside. Maybe it will start to like perk up again here.
Well, I think that's ongoing. That was how I read it. And maybe it's not. Maybe they're done. But I thought that whole investigation and what they've done was still ongoing. I could be wrong about that, and somebody will text me in and correct me if that's the case. But
yeah, well, I mean, don't you think that there's going to be some things that come out of that? I mean, once you open the door for this, I feel like there's going to be a lot of people coming forward, and it just seems like Major League Baseball in general hasn't handled it very well either. And go back to what Groz said, you know, that they should have just removed any possibility of that going forward, you know, and just said, hey, look, we're not going to do this ever again. You know, we're not going to have guys, and I don't know how you would do that. Like, if there's somebody on second base, and that's called the good old fashioned, you know, good way to steal signs, right? You got a guy on second base.
That's the acceptable way. They call that gamesmanship.
Right.
Right. It was acknowledged that it took place and it's been part of the game. And I think that, and I was having this debate with Salk earlier, who thinks, yeah, it's not that big a deal. The problem is that they were told to stop and they didn't stop. I'm like, yeah, okay. That's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is the lengths they went to cheat, right? If it's a guy on second and that's just been what it's been and everybody's accepted it over the years of baseball, okay, I can live with that. But they took it 8 extra steps. They brought in technology. They brought in systems, and they used it for a season and a half. So you can't tell me that's not part of the problem. I understand being told, hey, cut this out, and then they disobeyed that. Yes, absolutely is a problem. But on top of that, let's not forget what they actually did is they cheated. They challenged the integrity of the game. You now feel like the results of those games are in question based on the advantages that they had, right? Is there any gray area there?
Well, no, but don't you think Rob Manfred needs to come out and say something about, like, okay, yes, this is enough. We're going to have one day where you guys can ask all the questions with all the teams, all the managers, including the Astros and everybody else, and then after that, it's over. We're not going to do it anymore. But I'm enjoying it. I love hearing, you know, hearing Verlander today. I wish I'd said more. I'm sorry. And then you have the rebuttal from a guy like C.J. Nitkowski, who I hadn't really heard of. I guess he's a Rangers broadcaster. He used to be a pitcher, but he says, spare us with that kind of thinking. If you're turning that ring in and giving back that World Series share, you know, if you're going to say that kind of stuff, then let's see some tangible results behind it. So I just, yeah, I'm, it's going to just keep going on. Every time the Astros are in town, it's going to be at least the first time they're in town here in Seattle, elsewhere. Anaheim, their first road game is at Anaheim, April 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And I read Tim Dahlberg from AP said that thousands of tickets have already been bought by Dodger fans. And you know what they're going there to do.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I just, that was such a head-scratching moment when I saw that. I was like, this feels like a parody. I don't think it had any impact. 1 minute later, I didn't say that. Hey, the guy should run for office. That's what politicians do.
Do you have Bregman? Do you have his sound there?
Yeah, we'll get into some of these other ones.
Well, because he was really cocky about it in the beginning, right? He was like, the report has been filed, and he answered that three times instead of, you know, asking any other question. But, you know, there was a picture of Bregman, Altuve, even Dusty Baker. Everybody just looked totally defeated. It just looked like, you know, when you see a bad little boy that you put in the corner, put the dunce hat on him or whatever they used to do back in the day. So it just looked like I'm a bad kid and I've been punished and I don't know really what they can say, but, you know, certainly something better than that.
Why Dusty Baker have to be trotted out there? I heard Danny talking about it with Paul this morning on their show.
Well, that's what they brought him in for.
Well, did Dusty Baker even comment?
He said he paraphrasing because I read it earlier. Basically, he's hoping people can forgive these players, and he's thrown into this position, unfortunately. But it's what he signed up for. That's why they went with a grizzled old vet versus somebody who might be the young up and comer for damage control and credibility. Dusty Baker, there's no whiff of controversy around him throughout his career. He's the kind of guy who can sort of keep the ship sturdy while this is going on, and he's a placeholder. So it's you feel bad for him on some level, but that's ultimately what they brought him in to do. You know, so I don't think he was unsuspecting, like, wow, I can't believe I got to sit here and answer questions about this.
Yeah, you know, I heard Groz this morning talking with Clayton about it being negative publicity, the kind that you don't want. And a lot of times you talk about positive or negative, you'll take the publicity. I don't agree with Groz on that one. I think this is going to heighten interest in baseball this year with people that are just kind of not really paying attention. And then they might check in to see how the Astros are doing.
Yeah, that was the other part of the debate with Saul, because I'm like thinking that the ratings for Astros games will probably go up because people want to see reaction, or is somebody going to plunk one of these guys this game? Am I going to see that? And I would imagine attendance for Astros games on the road would probably increase from what they were last year for those very same reasons. How is this fan base going to react? How is the opposing team going to react? Are they going to plunk Altuve? Are they going to plunk Bregman? And speaking of Bregman, here is his reading of the apology.
I am really sorry about the choices that were made by my team, by the organization, and by me. I have learned from this, and I hope to regain the trust of baseball fans. I would also like to thank the Astros fans for all of their support. We as a team are totally focused on moving forward to the 2020 season. Thank you.
He sounds like me doing an ad read. I mean, come on. Come on. I didn't see the video. I've heard that clip from Bregman, but you don't go out there with note cards or a prepared statement.
Never.
You go out there in a situation like this, and even if you fumble through your apology, you fumble your way through it, but you don't look at a prepared statement and talk the way that he did.
It's horrible. There is enough there. You don't need note cards to say in that situation, you speak from your heart. And if you're truly ashamed of what happened and you're contrite, then it will just come through. You don't need to sit there and read that. He's been probably the worst of all of the offenders.
Yeah, because
here.
He was almost smug when he did it before about, well, Major League Baseball conducted their investigation, whatever he was saying, and then he would be asked another question and then just repeat that line, and he was kind of snickering. He remember that audio we had yeah. before of him just repeating that same line over and over, and it was like he thought it was hilarious. I'm like, and
yeah, see, you know, they're still not getting it. But, you know, 206 here, and this is something I brought up to Shannon, asking her, and she's like, well, that's a good question. I don't know if this is going to happen or not, but is this going to threaten their Hall of Fame eligibility, 206 texting that in, 710-710?
Well, it should if you're going to keep the steroid guys out.
Totally. I mean, to me, this is much more. I mean, you if you're on steroids, yeah, that extra muscle when you make contact with a baseball, mm-hmm. but you still have to make contact with a baseball.
And you don't know what pitch is coming.
You don't know what's coming. And
that's an individual, that's an individual's motivation, right? That's, you're a baseball player. Dave Wyman says, hey, I need more. I've got to be able to hit for more power, whatever it is, to keep my job. You're making that independent decision. This was a conspiracy. They all colluded together. This was a team effort. Hey, you do this, I'm going to hit the trash can, and the guy up at the plate's going to know that this is coming. We're all working together, right? They all conspired together. So this is a group effort versus a singular individual who may have kept it secret from his teammates, may not have. I mean, who knows how that went down all the time. But that's one person taking a step on his own versus a team getting together saying, here's the plan, guys. This is planned code breaker, as they called it.
Yeah, you know, maybe this will be a good thing in the end, that it'll start to wash some of this stuff out. Is this kind of one of these good old boy things of, oh, you know, we've been doing this for years and, you know, stealing. And how about just try to wipe it out entirely? I mean, I think pitchers and catchers are, you know, it's been up to them over the years to prevent this kind of sign stealing stuff. But once, you know, that's because you're being sloppy with your signs or whatever, you got to change them. Okay, fine. That's fine. But now that they're using technology, it just got further and further down the road. And all of a sudden now, you know, these guys, they look as guilty as can be, and rightfully so. And so this is just, you know, I think also, again, I can't say enough, the Manfred thing, to me, he needs to step in and say, you guys, this isn't just about you, man. This is about our game. And the game of baseball, and there's already, you know, a lot of, you know, talk about that it's an older person's game. You do see a lot of older people. The older I get, the more interested I become in baseball. I'll tell you that.
You're not helping the stereotype, Dave.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you want to attract young kids. I don't know. Maybe this will bring about, and everybody keeps with these brilliant ideas about having trash can night. Yeah, that's been suggested
for
many,
every ballpark.
Many times.
Yeah,
so,
for every ballpark.
Yeah.
Here's a cut from Jose Altuve reading his apology.
I also will be brief. We had a great team meeting last night, and I want to say that the whole Astros organization and the team feel bad about what happened in 2017. We especially feel remorse for the impact in our fans and the game of baseball, and our team is determined to move forward, to play with intensity, and to bring back a championship to Houston in 2020. Thank you.
Sounded better than Bregman anyway.
Yeah, see, well, I want to believe him. I don't want to believe Bregman, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the other guys? I mean, you recited what Verlander had to say. I wish I had said more.
Correa said something, too.
Well, that implies you said something. I wish I had said more. So
yeah,
did you protest at some point, but not enough?
He was pressed on that, but he didn't. That's between me and my teammates, what he was saying. I like what Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, had to say. He didn't say much, but he just said he believes in karma. So there you go. I do, too.
Yeah, and we'll get into it. We got a lot of cuts here. We got some from Dusty Baker and some other ones. We'll get into this as the show goes on, but let's take two.
Take two.
UW is at USC tonight at 6 p.m. trying to end their six-game losing streak, and the Cougs are facing UCLA at 8 o'clock.
This is the night. This is the night for Coach Hop. Let's go!
They're
going to turn it around here.
Didn't they beat the daylights out of them before?
By 32.
I'm telling you, they're going to turn around.
Would this convince you that they've turned things, they've got it fixed now if they beat USC?
Yes. You know why? They're 0-5 on the road. Six-game losing streak. 0-5 on the road. So 2-9 USC 6-5 in Pac-12 play, but I just feel like there's too much talent. Hopkins is going to turn it around here.
What say you, Jim? If they beat USC, what does that tell you?
Boy, well, they're 3-point underdogs tonight. So, yeah, I don't know what it tells me. I guess you start to right the ship a little bit, and you start having some belief and some validation with what Hopkins is trying to show these guys. But, boy, I heard Brock this morning. It's true. Have you seen a team with worse body language than Washington?
That's why I'm on the other side from Dave. I just feel like this team is – I'm not saying they've quit, but I feel like soon as something goes wrong, that they kind of subconsciously go, oh boy, here we go again.
It's all going to get turned around tonight.
You guys are a genius.
Well, but
it's enough on the Huskies. What about the Cougs tonight? You know, we're about like 2-58 there at Pauley Pavilion. I think we'll get our third.
Cougs
win there
are
tonight.
Playing well, man. Cougs have been playing well.
Yeah, the defense isn't as good on the road, so they're trying to address that. And
are you
going
to pick them to lose every game, Jim? Do Dave and I have to talk you off the ledge every
time? No, it was just one game. I was concerned about the Huskies going over there to Pullman. And I'm always concerned when they're playing at Pauley Pavilion because historically we have not done well there.
So are you calling for a loss?
No. Probably. We're going to lose by 15.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Well, I'm not hoping that'll happen, but if you want just my objective opinion, yeah. I think UCLA coming off that win that they had in Tucson over Curtis Rogers' bear down team there, yeah, they looked impressive to me. So, yeah, I think the Cougs are going to lose by 15.
Surprised you're so excited.
Are you happy now?
To the Washington State Cougar thing. We were talking about the Huskies. You were in a hurry to get to that?
Yeah, to tell us how they were going to lose by 15.
Touche, Dave.
I can't wait to tell you how they're going to get just drilled. It's going to be great.
Former Panthers tight end Greg Olsen visited the Seahawks yesterday after also making stops in Buffalo and Washington. Ian Rappaport reported that he could make a decision as early as tomorrow.
Come on. He went to Buffalo and Washington? I understand Buffalo.
Buffalo.
They got a good young quarterback there.
Yeah, Josh Allen. They were a playoff team this year. But Washington?
You want to play?
There's an assistant Rivera. Coach there. Ron Rivera.
He loves Ron Rivera. Thank you, Moore.
Yeah, but they're the Washington Redskins. And who's their quarterback? Case Keenum?
Who's their owner?
Daniel Snyder, little Danny Snyder.
Closer to Charlotte, though, if you want to keep your family in Charlotte.
All right, so
I think they're going with Dwayne Haskins now.
Are they going
to
go
close
with him?
How close is it to Charlotte, though?
It's still closer than Seattle, I guess. But
you still got to go to the airport and get on a plane.
Is winning important? That's what we'll know by his decision.
Well, he might take the broadcasting booth over all three teams.
And that's fair. That's fine, too. But if he chooses Washington over Seattle or Buffalo, that tells you... Well, he wasn't that concerned with winning.
Well, it tells you he must really, really, really love Ron Rivera, because it just seems like one of those franchises you don't want to be part of. Washington, Miami, Cincinnati, I guess, to some degree.
Yeah.
I mean,
Cleveland.
The more I think about it, the more I'm excited for I think the Seahawks should sign him here.
Well, we'll see. What,
worried about Disley's health.
See what decision he comes up with. Meanwhile, we've had lengthy discussions about whether bringing a player in can disrupt a team. But what about losing a great locker room guy? What kind of impact does that have? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Bob, do you want to continue to pistol whip the Houston Astros?
I do later, yes. I do. I've got more. I've got more ammo for those absolute buffoons. How do you screw it up like that? That's amazing. It's really impressive. Their ability to do that. We'll get into it later. Again, David Schoenfeld from ESPN.com will be with us, so we'll address that with him. We'll talk NFL with John Clayton at 4 o'clock. But we've spent time talking about, you know, Jim wrote the story, 710sports.com, about the idea of Michael Bennett coming back, and that conversation sort of gained a little steam for a while. People were weighing in. No, he's a toxic individual in the locker room. You don't want him there. So we've talked about guys who could have a negative impact with their personality, big, loud personalities that can – have a negative impact. What kind of impact does it have if you lose a guy who's widely considered to be a great locker room personality? And this comes on the heels of, we're debating who's staying, who's going. And DJ Fluker's a guy that people have talked about the potential of him leaving, that they might look to get younger, get more mobile there, to get somebody who might be a better pass blocker, where he's not the most mobile guy. He's obviously a very good run blocker, not a great pass blocker. But this is a guy we love talking to probably more than just about anybody. The players love, everybody loves him who comes in contact with him. So the idea of removing a voice, that's a huge positive. Have you ever faced that in your career?
Yeah, well, adding and losing. And just real quick, I remember my first year in Denver when they brought Gary Zimmerman in there, who's an Oregon guy that's now in the Hall of Fame. There was like a feeling, and also he was going to play next to Brian Habib, who was a guard from University of Washington. A lot of people remember him. And, you know, they had played together in Minnesota. And it just, it like bolstered, it was like they sent a message that they were really serious about protecting Elway and, you know, getting the offense going. And so I think I remember that team, even though I was new there, really reacting, like you could feel it. On the other end of it, when they traded Dave Brown to the Packers, I think it was my rookie year or second year, Dave Brown was, man, he was the soul of that defense, and I've talked about him many times, and he passed away. I wrote about him in the book as being, you know, part of the original Legion of Boom, but when they traded him away, because he'd been here for a good amount, he was drafted in the first round, I believe, by the Pittsburgh Steelers, and then he became a Seahawk in the you know, new franchise draft, whatever they called that, in 1976.
Expansion draft,
exactly. So, but yeah, when he was traded away, there was a couple of days, because I've always said this about in the NFL, it's like the shortest mourning period anywhere. Like if somebody gets cut or somebody gets injured or whatever, they clear out his locker. It's like you look at there, you know, over there and go, damn, yeah, he's not going to be here anymore. But you have to move on. But with Dave Brown, that one kind of cast a pall over the locker room for a good amount of time. So, yeah, that to me is one of those where – and it happened as camp, you know, when we were all together. Mm-hmm. And so that had a different impact. If you come back next year and you don't see DJ Fluker's, you know, locker in there with his name, you might, you know, feel that. But it's a little bit different when you do it in the off season as opposed to during the regular season. And that's what happened with Dave Brown. But do we have any clips from Fluker? Because, man – I know he was our favorite.
Yeah, he's, I mean, we've never walked out of an interview with him and not sat there and go, what a good guy, man. How do you not love that guy? And yeah, we got a couple of Fluker sound bites here. Here he is talking about Snacks Harrison on his side.
Yeah, they put Snacks on my side. He was on my side all game. I said, well, it's gonna be a long day, fellas.
Here he is talking about.
I saw him mumbling about that on the way out to the bus. I've told this story before. He's like, yeah, they say he's 380. No way. He's 420. And I can't say all the things that he was saying, but right. He was just mumbling about Snacks Harrison. And he was talking to this scout, and the scout was on his phone. He goes, he's not listening to me. I'm like, hey, I'll listen to you, Fluke. He's like, yeah, man, you see the size of that guy? He just went on and on and on and on. Just hilarious, always in a good mood. I've never seen him in a bad mood.
And the guy loves football.
He loves it.
He loves the game so much. Here he is talking about facing Snacks. Two bears battling in the woods is what he compared it to.
Yeah, they came home on all game. We battled now. It was like two bears in the woods going at it, you know. But, hey, we came out on top of it, so, hey, I'm happy with that.
He's a guy, you hear his voice, you smile.
Yeah, and what was it with the Rams? He was taking a horse to water, or they were taking him to the... Took him to the water.
Yeah.
He was talking about Sue.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Dominican Sue. Well, and then here's him and Lockett doing the mocking Russell's video, or Seattle, we got a deal. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Hey, Seattle, we got a deal. Go Hawks!
Big old Fluker there playing the role of Sierra.
So Fluker and Lockett got into a bed together and with a cover over the top of them to simulate what, and that's one of the things that really made me love Russell more, because you know when you can give a guy like that, make fun of him that way, mm-hmm. I mean, that means he's one of the guys and everybody loves him, so
he had it coming for that, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, and somebody texting in bringing up a point that Jim was touching on before the show, 360, says, look at how the Lions tanked after trading Diggs. Now, I'm not sure if that's why they tanked.
Well, it's because they have a terrible coach, for starters.
Yeah, there's that.
He's sloppy. Slovenly.
Sloppy coach. But you saw how they responded. Now, did it impact the mood? Did it impact their demeanor or their incentive?
I think it did. I mean, what'd they finish, 3-12 or...
3-12-1.
Yeah, and so you look at what happened back there. All the comments that came out of Detroit, and how they Darius Slay, all these guys that were missing him. And then I think if you're in the locker room, I mean, Dave, you've been there. I haven't, but I'm sitting there. If I'm going, wait a minute, we got a fifth-round pick for Quandre Diggs, a starter on our defense, and you got rid of him? So, yeah, I just I can see where it would have the opposite effect, like we were talking about with Michael Bennett worrying about the toxic personality. But when you lose a guy, I think with Fluker, though, it's a $3.4 million cap hit. If you so if you were to release him, you could make some sense and maybe parlay that money into something else. But it probably depends on who you bring in to replace him at right guard, too.
I'll tell you what, I think he, and whether you think Jermaine Ifedi had a good year or not, and I got heat for this yesterday, but I didn't say Jermaine Ifedi had a great year. I said he was good. He wasn't noticeable in bad ways.
So an average right tackle, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was okay. But I think the reason, one of the reasons why, certainly Mike Solari. I think Mike Solari explains things in a way that he can understand. And the thing I remember, not to get off on Ifedi too much, but I remember one of the things, so I love Tom Cable. Cable did a great job while he was here until it stopped working. But, you know, he was like, I want to make him uncomfortable. And I always remember thinking, why? Why? Make him comfortable. Don't make him uncomfortable. And I think DJ Fluker and Mike Solari together made Jermaine Ifedi a better player. So, and you know this, DJ Fluker is going to talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of guys get out on the field and they clam up. They don't say a word. And then there are other guys that talk a lot. Eugene Robinson, my gosh, he was always in my ear talking about things that I knew already. I'm like, yeah, Gene, I know that. I see that it's strong left and that the tight end's on the right side. And yes, I know that's a slot formation. But the fact that he was constantly talking about it helped. And so, and same thing with, I think, with Fluker and Ifedi. So that's another reason why you would keep him. I mean, you're obviously not just keeping him because he's a spirit leader.
Yeah, and that's what the texter 253, which I think is a fair point, but I don't think we're saying this. He says, look, who sent this in, look, I respect fun and nice guys, but I want good players. Being nice doesn't protect Russ and win games.
Well, I would agree with that, number one, and I was just about to bring up Luke Wilson. Mm-hmm. I mean, Luke, and I think we all said, yeah, Luke's probably not going to be here.
Right.
But the reason why you would keep him is because, you know, as Pete calls him, he's the juice master. You know, yeah. He's the guy that gets everybody fired up. Yeah. And Fluker's in that same category, but he's a better player. I mean, I think he's a more important player than Luke is, unfortunately.
All right, coming up, the Astros scandal has brought Pete Rose to the forefront once again. But should these two stories be linked at all? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Who's this, Bob? Walking Papers?
Yeah. That's the voice of my buddy Jeff Angel. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday to him. Meanwhile, coming up at 4 o'clock today, the professor, John Clayton, will be with us. Speaking of music, see how Jim's dressed today?
Doesn't he look sharp? Proud of him.
He's got his country music duds on today.
Really, yeah, I'm going to a concert tonight.
A country music show. He's going to leave the show early, which he would thrash you for or me for.
Oh, sure.
And then he's going to take next week off, which he would thrash you for or me for.
Yeah, but he's going to the concert with his hot wife, who's all dressed up country.
She's fired up. We're going to see Lindsay L. at some place down in Tacoma.
That concert's more important than entertaining our listeners here?
Well, the that's like, what do you know about good radio? No, I'm putting the listeners second after 5:30.
Yes, you are.
Jim, I think everybody should take off as much time as they possibly can.
Yeah.
But when you leave, we're going to rip you.
That's okay. I'll be sitting in traffic on I-5 and you guys just rip away.
Because you've set the standard, Jim, for ripping.
You just feel free, Bob.
All right. Meanwhile, Professor at 4 o'clock, we talked about the Astros situation, and Pete Rose has come back into the consciousness of baseball fans out there because he is sort of propped up once again and made a claim that he should be allowed back into the game of baseball. And to me, it's two different conversations with Pete Rose. There's a Hall of Fame question or debate, and then there's being employed in baseball debate. Those are two separate things to me. He should, without question, without hesitation, with no asterisks whatsoever, be allowed into the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. And people are free to disagree. That's fine. Should he be allowed to be employed in baseball, be a manager again? Okay, I get the debate there. That is a different topic. That is a guy who gambled on the sport of baseball. You don't want somebody who's pulling the strings, you know, saying this guy plays, this guy sits, I'm pulling this guy at this time, whatever.
Yeah, but he thinks since PED users and sign stealers weren't banned from baseball, he shouldn't be either.
Yeah, there's really not a connection there, in my opinion. Now, I think he's more than paid his price. Guy's been out of the game for decades.
It's been 30 years now.
Yes. Meanwhile, there's not a single player involved in this most recent scandal that's paid 1 cent of a fine, that's going to serve one game of a suspension. Their punishment is what? Public embarrassment, public shame, being associated with it. That's
Do you think those guys are actually even embarrassed?
No. Some of them are defiant. I think they're doing their best to actually squash that. I think they're probably feeling it internally. Altuve, his initial comments were almost as if he were mad that others were mad at him for cheating. That, oh, they don't think we could do it. We're a good team. We'll come back and win a World Series and show you. Like, wait a minute. You have a chip on your shoulder because people have the audacity to take what you did as an affront to the game of baseball?
Yeah.
I would be so embarrassed. Wouldn't you?
Yes.
I mean, the whole thing is, oh, this guy's got a great eye for pitches. And, you know, he's a guy that can lay off him. Remember, we were talking about Vogie that way for a while. And, you know, it's just that's your prowess. That's what you built
career
on.
That's your claim to fame.
Right. And now it's, oh, well, you know. And, you know, look, the percentage of times he knew it was coming. Let's say he had 500 at-bats. You know, maybe it was 30, 40 times. How many times do we think?
Said they were doing it on the road and at home through the entire 17 season and into the 18 season.
How come nobody asked those players about the buzzers today? Was it because they were told that, no, we're only going to have a statement here and then we're not taking questions?
Well, they did. Some of them did answer questions at their lockers. I saw that, but I didn't see I just saw clips.
No, but Altuve, if you were a reporter, wouldn't you have blurted out something about the buzzers?
And maybe they did. I didn't see a response. Yeah. I didn't read one. Maybe he was asked about it. I'm not sure. So,
But I
Jim
don't think
Crane was asked about it, and he says he doesn't believe that happened.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Well, he doesn't believe it had an impact on the game,
right,
at least from 1 minute to the other.
But with Pete Rose, I mean, I heard a conversation today with Jim Gray. I think we might have some clips from it. But, you know, just because, this is way worse than what Pete Rose did, but what Pete Rose did is still wrong.
Yeah, he lied about it forever before he finally admitted it. But this is when it sort of came to a head, and Jim Gray became persona non grata for the way he went after Pete Rose at this at the All-Star game here.
Pete, let me ask you now. It seems as though that there is an opening. The American public is very forgiving. Are you willing to show contrition, admit that you bet on baseball, and make some sort of an apology to that effect?
Not at all, Jim. Not at all. I'm not going to admit something that didn't happen. I know you get tired of hearing me say that, but
the overwhelming evidence that is in that report, why not make that step with this opening?
It's too much of a festive night to worry about that. I mean, because I don't know what evidence you're talking about.
You signed a paper acknowledging the ban. Why did you sign it if you didn't agree to
but it also says I can apply for reinstatement after 1 year.
You have applied for reinstatement in 1997. Have you heard back from Commissioner Selig?
No, but I hope to someday.
Do you think Gray was out of line there?
I think it was more about where they were at and what was being celebrated at that time. They felt like it wasn't the right venue, if I recall correctly.
Was he being honored for something, Pete Rose? He was down on the field in a suit and tie.
Yeah, was
I think
that
it was the All-Century team.
All-Century team in Boston. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, and I think Jim Gray, I heard him talking about it, about that interview, 20 years ago or so, that he felt like he should have looked at the camera more and not just at Pete Rose, because everybody felt like he was just there to get after Pete Rose. But, you know, he was saying, look, I'd talked to Pete a number of times. He used to do the Phillies pregame radio show. He knew Pete Rose really well, and just the way it came out. But he was a bulldog on that, wasn't he?
He certainly was. And at that point, hadn't heard from Bud Selig. You did get comment from Bud Selig.
You know, I've heard the discussion. What I would say to you is, but
I missed that word, Smith. He was really good.
He stole the pilots, Bob.
Yeah, he did.
Stole the pilot.
Yeah, remember you were going to get the whole team fired up?
Zunino looked at me like I was crazy.
He goes, yeah, I'll let the guys know, because Jim was telling Zunino this whole thing. We're getting ready to play the Brewers and who the pilots became.
Certainly.
And so Jim talked about how hurtful it was to him when he was younger, and, you know, you guys should be fired up to win this game. And
you should be hurt, too.
And Zunino looks at him and goes, well, I'll let the guys know.
And the way he said it, you knew that was not going to happen.
No,
wasn't the response you were hoping for.
But they're like, I mean, for a 12-year-old me back in 69, they're like the version of the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Brewers and you don't really pull for them.
If you're
60 and up, you don't pull for the Brewers.
Were you making bets on the pilots back then?
I was not.
He's betting baseball cards and gum.
That did not happen.
All right, coming up, we're going to hear if Greg Olsen is a Seahawk by tomorrow. We'll see what the professor thinks those chances are and get his take on some other things happening in the NFL. You guys can text in questions for the professor as well. If we've got time, we'll get to those. Just text them in to 710-710. The professor joins us next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.